This is the August 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net in McHenry, Illinois, and Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to us anytime you'd like. Where? At willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play right there from the website or search for Commodity Week in your favorite podcast applications. Let's begin, as we usually do, with a list of items we should discuss for the day. Dale Durkles, I'll start with you. What's on your list?
Well, all of us would probably say the USDA numbers itself we had on Wednesday, but I think we probably ought to add into that the FSA numbers that we had Wednesday afternoon. They seem to have gotten more play than anything else at this point.
Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net.
Well, I think we also, you know, kind of on the same token, I think you got to talk a little bit of supply about that damage and what we're hearing of what happened out in Iowa with the lost production due to that derecho that came through.
And Sherman Newland, how about from you?
You know, I think with the recent market action in the last 2 days, you know, what should producers be looking at doing right now going into harvest? And, you know, I wonder if the numbers that we saw on yields yesterday, are those going to be the biggest numbers that we'll see?
Well, Sherman, I want to start with you because next week you will be traveling with Karen Braun, actually, from Reuters. Those who follow Twitter may know her name or have seen it. On the annual Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour that is taking place, though a lot of it for the consumer end user will be virtual, you will be making a run across. Which leg? Are you going eastern or western, by the way?
I go on the western leg. This will be my third year, so it's going to be a little bit different this year. They're pairing. I'm going to be a driver. This is the first time I've been a driver on the trip, so hopefully I can get there and back a lot easier than I have the last 2 years. But you know, they're just, instead of having multiple riders in a vehicle, they're just letting two in the same vehicle. So Karen and I are matched up and we're going around for the week. We'll be starting in Sioux Falls, and then down to Grand Island and then Nebraska City and then Spencer, Iowa, and we'll end up in Rochester, Minnesota. So we'll hopefully get a good eye, you know, bird's eye view of what the stuff in Iowa looks like on the western side anyway.
Yeah, you should get a good view both of the west central part mm-hmm. of Iowa, right, where it's been really dry. And mm-hmm. will you also go far enough to the east on your route in order to get into some of the wind damaged area, do you think?
I will on my trip up to get to Sioux Falls. I'll be going right through the heart of it. So on Saturday, I'll probably make a few stops and see what some stuff looks like at that point in time.
You'll be traveling 20 then, across from Cedar Falls to Sioux Falls, Sioux City, I would assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, on your way up, I'd probably start and go west from Ames, Iowa, because that'd take you right through the heart of all that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 20 would be pretty close. That'd be a little north, I think, of Ames.
But, right.
And it's the route I traveled when I was coming back from North Dakota a couple of weeks ago. So I'll be I would be interested to see what you think. I kept having to get back out of the vehicle in west central Iowa because the crop looked so poor but was so good on the inside. And it surprised me. And I'd like to know what it looks like today and whether that continues. So we'll be talking with you during the week, I know, to get kind of an idea about the size of this crop. And Sherman, I think I'll stay with you for the moment. Do you think USDA has the highest numbers for the year for corn and soybeans?
I mean, I didn't disagree with them when they came out. They weren't a surprise to me. I mean, I think the bean number, honestly, I kind of think the bean number could end up being a tad bigger than what they put out the other day. I think we're going to have a tremendously big bean crop coming. I mean, a lot of beans got planted early, which means, you know, bodes well for a higher yield, hopefully. So I think the bean number could grow a little bit as far as yields go. The corn number, I don't know, after what happened in Iowa with the storm, I think that's definitely going to take some, you know, yield off the ending stocks. From all that, how much is still yet to be seen. But I do know, like Illinois, you know, Indiana, Minnesota, South Dakota, even Kansas, I think, you know, a lot of these other states are looking really, really good. I think, you know, around here, I think we're looking at some tremendously good crops, if not record.
Yeah, I know. I went through South Dakota and North Dakota, and the folks in North Dakota said I was looking at their crop with Illinois goggles on. and they thought it was their best crop in 5 years in that area. And then I got into South Dakota, and that crop really looked tremendous. I was surprised by how well it looked. Jim McCormick, you wanted to talk about this damage in Iowa. What kind of information do you have on what took place and how much damage might be there?
Well, what we're hearing right now, I think on the low end, it's probably going to be around 100 million bushel loss. So a little over a bushel off the national yield. That's the low end. We've heard people as high as 400 million bushel loss, but most of our contacts in the elevator industry and the ethanol industry in that part of the state said it was probably going to be somewhere between the 100 and 200 million bushel loss level. What's interesting, our contacts also today said as this market was rallying today, there was dead silence from the hedge industry out of Iowa. There was nobody in Iowa hedging grain today, even though the market had this nice surge. So there's definitely a lot of people out there trying to, you know, calculate the risk and the loss and what's out there right now. And the big problem we see for the people in the western part of Iowa and the western part of the country right now is basis into the fall. You've got in the North Dakota, you've got problems moving oil through, you know, the pipeline, so they're running it by the trains. So they're having a hard time getting trains to move the corn and beans for the fall harvest. And now you've got a situation going on in Iowa with a lot of devastation. Probably that's not probably getting the news it needs. It's just the loss of bin space, the elevator space, the legs, being able to get this corn moved from point A to point B. It is just going to be a long, hard slog for those guys in that part of the country, I fear, for this fall. And that will pull down the national average a little bit, we believe.
And if it's a good crop still there in Iowa, though it's leaning over, it'll take them a long time to get through it. Dale Turkles, what do you think of the USDA numbers from Tuesday of this week?
Well, the one thing I go back and look at to kind of kick off and looking at the yield number itself, you know, I came back and brought their August numbers down into 10 state, and over the 10 states that they'll later measure, we were basically looking at 188.3 bushel to the acre. Not a record, but close to the record we posted to start off with back in 2018. But we ended up down at 2018 in those 10 states, too, at 183. So we're basically starting at a new record. The interesting twist that I looked at this, to get to that 188.3 on the 10 major states, I had to bump my plant population to a new record by about a percent, percent and a half, and I had to start out with a new record ear weight to get there. So basically that told me, yeah, there's upside potential in this thing maybe in terms of yield, but, you know, you really start to come back and question how much up, and then you start to think, you know, with the unknowns about plant population and even ear weight, you know, is there some downside potential in here that people just aren't aware of at this point in time? And that's even above and beyond, you know, some of the losses we've had here because of the storm we had last week.
Do you think the ear weight's there?
Could be. It's a little earlier to a little early to really say at this point in time. You know, the kind of weather that we've flipped into here in August, if it stays with us, you know, not being tremendously hot, you know, keeps extending those days between pollination and final maturity of the crop itself, you know, and that allows the plant itself to keep adding, you know, pounds into that kernel. So, you know, looking at temperatures going forward, monitoring the growing degree day is going to be important all the way into roughly about mid-September, we'll say, at this juncture, about another month out. But, you know, if the weather stays somewhat benign, yeah, we could end up with fairly hefty ear weights themselves. I go back to a lesson learned in 2017, too, in that was the year we had the drought to start off with up in the northern plains, came down into western parts of Iowa for the most part. But Iowa itself had a tremendous corn yield that year, even with some of that weather stress, moisture stress we had there into the middle part of that growing season.
Sherman Newland, what do things look like in your part of the world? As I view the weather that has taken place, I would guess you may have the best crop on hand that you've ever raised as a producer?
If it's not, I'll be surprised.
I thought so.
I've been out doing some yield checks around here, and they're just going to be stupid, I think, for corn and beans both. I mean, once this rain finally started coming down, we got close to, I'm going to say almost right at 10 inches in through here in the last couple, 3 weeks. And to have that this time of year with these cool weathers, conditions, and like Dale was saying, I mean, we're packing on test weight. I mean, the ears are heavy. They look good. I mean, I think we're looking at a very big crop around here. I mean, in some spots even, I think guys have had too much rain. But overall, I think the rain's been more beneficial than it has hurt. I mean, the beans also, like I said earlier, they got planted early. I mean, they're full of pods. You're just going to ask for better conditions in through here right now. And I think we're going to push record crop for corn and beans both.
Yeah, for those who don't know where Hudsonville, Illinois is, it would be from Terre Haute, or if you're from that area, Terre Haute, Indiana. What? How far south are you? Are you 25 minutes?
I'm about 25 miles south of Terre Haute.
25 miles south of Terre Haute, or Terre Haute. So just to give you an idea where he is. You're talking about just tremendous yields for your part of the world. Then.
Yeah. There's going to be some 280s, 290s. I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't a few fields that go 300. Maybe not mine, but there's going to be some really good corn numbers around through here. And beans, I think, same way. I think we're going to be 70, 80 type bushel beans, if not higher, maybe even some 90s for some guys where it's looking. But it's, we got lucky. We really did. We got a lot of rain and no wind, no damage. So
yeah, and I hate to say it this way, but just to give folks an idea, when we look at the state of Illinois, we would discount really what was happening in the southern part of the state.
Yeah.
And you, because there just wasn't hasn't been that much production in that area. But this may be a year where that's been changing as your rotations have changed as well down there. So that's a big number. Jim McCormick, have you been out? You're up near the Wisconsin border.
I'm near the Wisconsin border. Overall, it looks like it's going to be a very big crop up here. Things look well. We are a little bit wet early in the year, so some of the drowned out spots hurt us. But heck, I live in McHenry County, there's a lot of gravel. Normally this time of year, you see the hills kind of burn up. That has not happened. I can also tell you, Todd, I'm from Seymour, Indiana, about an hour south of Indianapolis. I was just down there about 10 days ago. And, the customers down there, farmers down there, they think it's going to be the best crop in 10 years in that part of the state. They've had a lot of rain. They have had extreme heat, and it is just going to be a bin buster of a crop down there. And just from what you see driving along I-65, I'd say the whole state looks like it's in a pretty good conditions. Customers over near Fort Wayne are telling me the same thing, some of the best crops ever. So it's really going to be interesting to see, I think, guys, as we go through the fall as to how big it is in the east versus potential what happens in the west, and then just throw in the demand aspect. I think it's going to be a very interesting fall.
So, Dale, he brings up an interesting twist in this, because early on I was thinking that the eastern Corn Belt, especially from this part of the world, east central Illinois through Indiana, Ohio, was not in good shape, and it wasn't, and that it was really going to be about whether the western part of the Corn Belt could make up for losses in a much smaller production area, frankly, in the eastern Corn Belt, and now it seems to have shifted. That gives you some, or gives me some pause to think about how big the crop is and how close USDA might really be on this number that they put out for the national average yield.
There's a couple of things here, and one of them I haven't done this week with the reports out and stuff, but I know the middle of last week I was looking at the vegetative health index maps, and it was quite interesting when you look at it across, let's say northern Illinois, northern Indiana, into western Ohio. We weren't as good on our vegetative health as we were back in 2018. Then you step back and you look at Iowa. They certainly weren't as good. 2018, the only problem spot we really had was Missouri. So, You know, I think looking at a crop's one thing. I think going out into the field and really doing some spot yield checks is really going to be important. And when you look at next week, you know, and the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and this comes off of a friend of mine, that Jerry Goodell, that he and another fellow came down into central Illinois and looped back into the Chicago here a couple of weeks ago. The one thing they were disappointed in was population stands on corn. They weren't as good as what they expected to see. So, you know, when I start looking at Pro Farmers Tour next week and looking at the data that we start to glean out of that, the thing I'm going to be looking at really is what is the plant population? And that really delves back into the fact when you look at these 10-state numbers, you know, I had to bump the population by a percent, percent and a half in that 10-state area to match what the USDA yield was. So, you know, I'm a little bit edgy. It's going to be a great crop no matter what. You know, it's not going to be a bad crop. But are we talking one that's going to hold up here in the 180, 182, or are we going to go back down and slip maybe a little bit below? You know, everybody tends to forget the USDA's trend-adjusted yield we've been using up until now, 178.5, was a new record by 2 bushels compared to what we had in 17 and 18. You know, and people are now just quick to go on up into the 180s, you know, and I heard a Looney Tune when, you know, 188 here about a week ago. But I think people might be getting a little bit ahead of themselves. You know, the USDA numbers are what they are, but on the balance of that, we need to remember they no longer collect any data in the field in August, and so that's purely a farmer survey. They're using some remote sensing input into that. But on the farmer survey side of it, I guess I am a little bit concerned, you know, are we getting the feedback loop coming in there off these people and the crop condition ratings? And yeah, the crop condition ratings this year are going to look good relative to last year, because last year was a problem year.
Well, there are some, what, 20,000 producers that the USDA surveyed. Surely producers have a pretty good idea of what they've got out in their fields at this point. Maybe not for soybeans, they would think. Those are always difficult. But
have they gone out and done yield checks? That's the big thing we don't know.
Do you want me to answer that question?
well, a lot of them, though, if they do that, a lot of them will underestimate, too. You know, there's been, I think the USDA kind of banks on that.
Trust me, I don't doubt the 300 bushel yield potential you saw in Southern Illinois, but I do go back and hearken. I think it was 2014's crop here in Central Illinois on a farm that I have to manage. And when I went in and reported yields at the FSA office here for the new farm bill, you know, I said 275 for 2014, and a woman looked at me and went, "Really?" And I went, "Yeah." And that was as perfect a year as we ever had in Central Illinois. And that's on rich, deep, black dirt. 300's a huge, huge challenge to get there in the end.
Hey, Jim McCormick, we've talked a lot about this. However, after the USDA report, both corn and soybeans rallied. They've had a really good week, and unless something really odd happens, soybeans will post an outside up week by the time we get to the end of the trade on Friday afternoon. What does this tell you, and what about how producers should be considering this? And I guess I'm going back to that comment you made that there wasn't any hedging happening by the elevators.
Well, I was going to say, the hedging a lot of was more in the west where the crop's debatable. I think there's a little bit more in the east. We are recommending, actually, Todd, to producers take a look at this. Back up near 9, if you look since July, every time we got near 9, it kind of failed. We haven't yet to close above the 200-day moving average. So we're telling guys, if for cash flow purposes, look to sell some of these beans. There's not a lot of carry in the market, and we've had a lot of customers selling some beans on this push higher and then using options to kind of use some reownership. We are encouraging reownership for a couple of reasons. It is dry for the next couple of weeks. There is not a lot of rain out there. You know, we all know the weather is a kind of a guess, but if we would trend dry for another couple of weeks, like some of the weather guys are forecasting, I think that could be a little bit bullish. you also got the strong exports. You've got this China trade talks here over the weekend. We'll see how that goes, and that could goose the market a little bit. And lastly, we are concerned about kind of the inflationary argument. We've seen the metal markets go crazy here the last couple months, and we think it's just a matter of time before you see some of that inflationary money come in and buy the grain. So we do think it's worthwhile re-owning some cheap options or vertical call spreads against the position. But go ahead and take advantage of these $9 beans and sell some of them. Make some catch-up sales, especially on the grain you cannot store.
I probably should get the same kind of advice from the other two of you. We'll start, Sherman, with you.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I did some of that myself today. I think, I sold some down to River for 9-11 for fall. I mean, that's pretty darn good. I think producers need to go out and actually, get an idea of what they're going to have and the bushels that they can't store at the farm, and have to go to the elevator. They need to make some catch up sales on these bushels on this rally. I think, over this $9 mark or wherever up in through here is really, really good price. I think this rally is a gift. Especially for the bean market, I do think we could go up higher with them. I mean, I don't disagree. Maybe time to pre-own a little bit without some call options. I'm okay with that. But I think stuff, you don't want to pay storage on this stuff that you have to go to town with. I think, trying to get some of that figured out on how many bushels you're going to have and getting some of that price now is probably a really good idea.
And Dale Durkles.
Well, if you're going to specifically talk about the beans, we've been struggling at the 9, or we can actually go up into somewhere around 9.20. But if we get over 9.25, you could see a quick stretch maybe that would take it to 9.5. But at this particular time of year, even if the weather does stay a little bit dry, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to decimate the crop at this particular juncture in time. I've seen dry end of summers actually end up being beneficial to bean yields themselves. They seem to still thrive relatively well as long as the heat doesn't get up at this point. So, looking at $9 on November and stretching up to maybe 9.25, if you got some sales you need to get on the books and made, get it done. Longer term, though, I think there's reason to you need to move stuff that you got to move in the fall. But I'm sitting here knowing I've got a number of big cyclicals, corn and beans both, that are going to be put behind this year that tell me something's getting ready to pop as we go the latter part of 2020 and certainly on into 2021. And I think, Jim mentioned, the inflationary bias. He was looking at gold. I think the bigger story there is keep your eye on the currency markets because the dollar this summer has given the first indications that we are getting ready to potentially turn down into a longer-term trend that should be lower.
Hey, I also want to ask you about something you listed up front, those FSA numbers from Wednesday. The 9 million prevent plant acres, that's a pretty good-sized number, though, when you add it all up. And I happen to be on the news conference with Todd Hubbs and Scott Irwin, not news conference, when they were adding that up. But it does put the principal acres back to where they should be. What else does it tell you about?
Well, the 9 million prevent plant acres, it was interesting after the June acreage report from the USDA, and I keep a spreadsheet that basically has like 16 different crops in it. USDA has a total crop acreage that's includes about five more minor ones, but the numbers off the June acreage report implied that the prevent plant should be somewhere around 8 to 9 million acres, and plugging in 9 million acres and the 899 that 8.99 FSA reported on Wednesday actually translate into a 9.1, 9.2 in the end if we follow a typical pattern, and I think we will. That says, all the acreage numbers fit together real well at this point. All the talk here today in the trade wasn't so much about the prevent plant number, although that surprised a few people. It was about the individual acreage numbers the FSA listed in corn and in beans. Corn was like about, 81 or something like that. I don't remember the bean number. And they were actually, low compared to, at this particular time of year, compared to what NASS is projecting for corn plantings. But FSA did come out and say, hey, because of the delay in reports and some of this stuff all tied into coronavirus this summer, we're actually still short of some data that we need to have to input into this stuff. So they were saying, you know, their input data could actually be a little bit shorter than it would be. So I think it's a little early to get too excited that NAS acre numbers are going to go down a lot from what they're already projecting.
And the chief of the crops branch, Lance Honig at USDA NAS, did confirm that, of course, see, they'll update the cotton numbers next month, but they won't get to updating any acreage numbers if there need to be changes until the October report for corn and soybeans.
And there's a reason they've always done that, and they've always said, you know, there are too many years that the data accumulation at FSA, and they can look at it every day, the data accumulation really still isn't strong enough until you get right into the end of September, beginning of October on some years. So that's why they kind of defer doing it. And what the FSA basically said today, or about the release on Wednesday, kind of confirms that, you know, we've got some issues here with this data we've seen so far that's preliminary, really being that preliminary and probably behind what it normally is.
All right, Sherman, I have a final question here for you, and maybe Jim McCormick, you can dive in. You made new crop soybean sales. If you've got old corn yet to sell, what do you do?
Old corn? Oh, I think you got to get rid of it on this bump up. I mean, we're bumping up against some resistance areas. I mean, we tried to get into the gap area on that Deese corn, didn't quite fill it today. I mean, and it's possible it could go up a few more pennies, but I think with the old corn market, I'd be selling it on this. I think this is a gift if you got old crop corn left.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think the big, and I would encourage people, if you've got it, do not wait. The biggest problem we have right now, from our context, there is millions of bushels that are sitting in DP pricing corn that are all going to hit here toward as we get into the first notice day. I think we can admit, how many times in the last 5 years did the market rally into first notice day? It almost always goes down in the first notice day. Everyone gets forced to make that final washout. And I think especially in the eastern corn belt where we've got a big crop and space is going to be a premium this fall, you don't want to wait. I think you just, this bump is a gift, you know, bite the bullet, sell the grain and move on to the new crop.
Dale, anything different from you? And otherwise, your final word for the day.
The bump is a gift in one sense, but it's a matter of what day you pull the trigger. And the reason I say that is, you know, the funds and the short position that they have at this point, you know, this can still stir in on any given day here for the next few days, some short-term excitement, which was part of what was in play here today. So if you bump December corn over that down gap we left here a few weeks ago at 344, you know, you rocket right back up into 350, 360. Certainly up in there, old crop corn, yeah, if you got it, you need to really be doing something with it. But I keep going back, and the one thing lost on a lot of people, you know, the lows we put in the corn market back in April, to me, were 5.5-year lows. We're trying to define where the 2-year low is going to fall at this point. This week maybe was a candidate. Who knows? But certainly by September, I think that window will start to get into a position of closing down. You put both long-term lows behind us here. That says there's some upside. So I don't know. If you got old crop corn and some of it's unpriced, if you want to play a little game with some of it, I wouldn't be opposed to putting some of it on. And there are people that go, think I'm crazy, but putting on a basis contract against next March, even though there's a carry in the thing, just betting that there's something getting ready to happen as we reach out into late 2020, early 2021, that's going to be stronger than what these people can define today.
Dale Durkles is with Grain Cycles. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Let's get a final word from Jim McCormick at agmarket.net as well. He's in McHenry, Illinois. Jim?
Well, I would just encourage the producers to kind of keep an eye on their break-evens or their profitability. If you'd made some decent sales up and, you know, toward the higher threes, maybe even low fours, and you've got these big yields coming in, your break-evens are down lower. Don't be afraid to lock some of the stuff in. The one thing we didn't do a whole lot of discussion, and I think we, you know, producers, there is a big demand number out there. The government raised the supply dramatically, but they raised demand 1.1 billion bushels year on year. And the fact of the matter is, this pandemic is still with us. It's probably going to be with us for another 6 months. That makes this ethanol market still susceptible. So we could see a revision down in ethanol demand. The feed sector is still questionable. A lot of livestock guys got beat up. So the feed demand jump in $325 million could also derail us a little bit. So do not be afraid to lock in profits. If you want to play the long-term bullish, like I said, I don't mind selling grain, but using some re-ownership. I am a little bit bullish in the long run on the inflationary play. I do think we have trying to put the long-term cycles in, and I think we're going to have an interesting run over the next couple of years. You can't keep printing money like the government has to not have something develop inflationary, I believe.
And Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois.
Yeah, I just want to go back and reverberate, look at how much extra stuff you're going to have come out of the fields. I mean, develop some sort of plan to do something with that, as you get into the harvest and not wait till that point in time. I mean, we got a long fall ahead of us. I think, we got to see what South America does and how their weather is going to play out down there. And, don't forget they're going to expand their acres. So that's going to be, a little on the bearish side. How far this rally can go is, anybody's guess. But, I think another thing a person needs to kind of look at is don't lose your eyes of the new crop for 21. I mean, we're getting 370 plus. I mean, if we could get that back to 390 or even $4. I mean, don't let that slip off your radar. I think you'll need to have to, be cognizant of that and make some sales up in here on these rallies for new crop too.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net in McHenry, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of Green Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.